I'm Michael Rosenbaum, Lex Luthor, and always hold on to Smallville.
Welcome to Always Hold On to Smallville. This podcast, we talk about each and every episode of the Young Superman show that ran from 2001 to 2011 on the WB and the CW. I'm your host, Zach Moore, and I am joined this week by Mr. Daniel Prue. What's up, Daniel?
Oh, not too much. Can you speak up? I can't quite hear you very well.
That's my attempt to replicate some of the sounds we hear in this episode.
Yep.
So we're talking about season 3, episode 10 of Smallville called Daredevil. No, I'm just kidding. So
nice. I like that. That's good.
Lots of Daredevil vibes on this week's episode. So this is talking about Whisper this week. And, you know, last season we talked about Heat. So, you know, you're kind of on that new power discovery episode track. So I'm trying to, you know, sometimes with guests we're like, we find a little theme, we try to keep that going. So that's why you that's why you're on this week.
It served me well so far, but I guess we'll see how it goes with this
one. We'll see how it goes. You know, I don't want to jump the gun here, but I guess I will. This is my least favorite New Power episode. Because generally, I think they do a really good job with these episodes. This one, not so much. Just in general, where would you like rank this in the echelon of He Gets a New Power episodes?
I would have to look at a list, because I don't know them off the top of my head. But it definitely seems to me to be the weakest one for sure. I forgot a lot of why it's not so great, but we'll get into that obviously.
We will. So in Smallville, The Official Companion, season 3 by Paul Simpson, available wherever books are sold. Creator Al Goff had this comment: "A lot of potentially good ingredients which didn't make a great cake. He shouldn't have been blind and got super hearing. Clark being blind could have been an episode to itself." And I think that's a great point, because I feel like this episode is so packed with things. Like, and we'll play the game of what day is it as we talk about this episode. Best I can tell, this takes place over the course of 2 days, maybe three.
Maybe. Yeah, it's tough to tell.
Because Smallville infamous for odd timelines and, like, what day is it? What time of day is it? Because I was, you know, going along with the story, and then like, about halfway through, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry about what happened this morning. I was like, this morning? That was the same day.
yeah. And then, you know, when Chloe and Lionel's scene, that's at night, even though it's only 3 hours away.
Oh yeah. This is the, this might be the first time we get a hard number for distance between Metropolis and Smallville. I don't recall if they said, I mean, they obviously, it's a distance, right? We take helicopters and whatnot. And then as we get further into the show, Metropolis, it gets closer to Smallville. As
yeah, 3 hours driving, even though you can see it from a field in the middle of Smallville. I don't think that computes, but that's okay.
I will always hold on to that shot from Nicodemus of them sitting in the sitting in the windmill, right? But another interesting factoid about this episode and Clark getting super hearing. Did you recall that the WB had a Tarzan TV show?
Okay, I do now. Okay. Something I hadn't thought of in 10 years or whatever, but
I would have completely forgotten about this, but there is a trailer for it on the Smallville season 1 DVDs, which came out when season 3 around the time of season 3 premiered.
Okay.
So it's like it's a little short like trailer, and it's kind of the same vein as, like, you know, Beauty and the Beast would be, you know, the one that Kristen Kirk went on to star in, right? It's like a modern interpretation from a tale as old as time or something, right? And it was like Tarzan, like, in the city or whatever. But the reason I bring that up is also in the companion. Al Goff said, "We were going to do this," speaking of super hearing, "earlier in the year, but the network the network told us that Tarzan had super hearing. We decided that whatever was done on other shows, we'd do better anyway." so they did it in a way. Of course, right? The Tarzan, short-lived. It was already off the air by the time Whisper was shown. Oh, so there ended up being no super hearing conflict after all. And I guess they wanted to give Tarzan a superpower. I mean, I thought he was just like really, you know, what do you call it? Athletic.
Yeah, I was just gonna ask, like, where did they pull that from? I don't think that's from the source material at all, but okay.
Is there an animal in the jungle that has super hearing that he learned this from? But anyway, that is a lost show in the annals of the WB. And I doubt you could even, I mean, look it up, guys. I doubt you could even find that on even DVD or iTunes or something.
Oh, so. I doubt it, yeah.
You know, there's another show, and this reminds me of short-lived shows on WB that have somewhat connections to Smallville. There was a show called The Mountain, right? And it starred Anson Mount, who was in an episode of Smallville Season 2, Precipice, which is actually directed by the same guy who directed this episode. And he was Lex's fiancé's ex-boyfriend. And he is now Captain Pike on Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, I knew that name sounded familiar. I don't okay, what episode was he in?
So, you know the episode where Lex and Helen, this is a very forgettable, not good episode, right? But their like relationship is like getting like to a crossroads. It's like, okay, we need to either like, you know, make it official or go our separate ways, right? But then her ex-boyfriend like comes out of nowhere, and it's one of those like, you know, lover from the past spurns the current relationship to the next level kind of thing. And this guy, he's like crazy. He smashes his face into a mirror. It's also Sheriff Adams' first episode. It's more known for that. That's her first appearance. And then also Clark beats up all these college jocks who are like picking on Lana. And then she learns like to kickbox from Lex or something. Very forgettable episode, but he was a guest star on it. And I've always kind of kept tabs on him because of that. And here he is, popping up on Star Trek. So it's all connected, Dan.
That's good. That's good. You know, I'm actually really excited. He looks the part, mm-hmm. and hopefully that goes well. I'm a little skeptical about what's going to happen in season two, but
I am as well for very, very, it's, you know, as Star Trek fans, right? It's always like, I'm hopeful. I'm hopefully optimistic, but I know a lot could go wrong. So yeah. We'll see.
Yes, we will see. But I will say that so far the casting has been, That's good casting right there.
Oh, so. He looks so much like Jeffrey Hunter. Yeah. I'm very excited for it. And they seem to really go out. Like he posts a lot of social media stuff, and like they had a whole thing about how they're doing his hair, you know, and like the whole like Jeffrey Hunter hair with the great. Anyway, I'm looking, that alone makes me excited for Discovery to see where they go with that with Captain Pike. But yep. But anyway, hey, Smallville, right?
Yeah, so. exactly.
One other thing I'll say about this episode before we jump into it is I'm always talking about how, you know, I imitated Smallville, Smallville imitated me, sort of. You know, it's like a life imitates art and imitates life with this thing. As you know, with your favorite TV shows, this is what you do, right? And so Clark got glasses in this episode. And because of this, I got glasses around the same time in high school. Because I didn't really, like, up until this point, I didn't really need glasses, but I could tell, like, when I'd squint, I could see, like, clear, you know, like focusing a camera. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that I have slight stigmatization. So, or slight stigmatism. I don't. So I'm not sure what the proper ophthalmological terminology is, but I'm not nearsighted or farsighted. I'm just slightly out of focus. So I do wear glasses. I don't need to wear them all the time in my everyday life. I you know, don't wear them, but I enjoy wearing them because it's like the Superman thing. So you know, I can read, I can see, I can legally drive without them. But I know in some pictures of me, you know, people see glasses, they won't see glasses. And yeah, I have glasses, and I first got them in this episode. And unlike Clark, I continued to keep them around. After
I was
going to
ask, did you get he has very small framed glasses in this episode.
I intentionally got them to look as much like these as possible because I'm a huge nerd.
Here, honey. Sit back. There you go. Oh, Jonathan, we have to do something.
Yeah, I know, sweetheart, but what? Clark's retinas were scarred by that heat burst. You saw the doctor. He was baffled.
He wasn't baffled, Jonathan. You handcuffed him.
The last time we trusted a doctor, she sold his blood to Lionel Luther.
Then we'll find someone we can trust.
We cannot risk that.
Clark has lost his sight. We may have to risk someone learning his secret.
Martha, this is not about Clark's secret. His powers have now done something that have hurt him. And I think before we run out and just do something, we ought to think this whole thing through.
Don't I get a vote?
Of course you do, Clark.
I think it may just be a question of time before I get better.
Sweetheart, it could be permanent.
and there's a lot of people who learn to live with disabilities every day. What's the worst that can happen? Go to school and walk through a wall?
Whisper is the 10th episode of Smallville's third season. It aired on January 21st, 2004. It was written by Ken Horton and directed by Tom Wright. And as I said, Tom Wright has directed one other episode of Smallville. He only directed two, and the other being Season 2's Precipice, guest starring Anson Mount and the new Captain Pike. So it's all connected.
Oh, man. Look at that.
Look at that synergy. It's completely unplanned.
Yeah.
So this episode starts out, this is the first, and you got to contextualize this episode, right? This is the first episode after Lana has come back home from being in the hospital from getting trampled on by her horse. So she was in physical therapy, but now she's back, and it's like business as usual, sort of. So Clark is outside a jewelry store. He's looking inside it. Lana walks up on the street. They have a little, you know, conversation there. They've been kind of, you know, it's one of these, of course, very Clark and Lana. They're want to be together, but they don't, and it's not the best scene in my opinion.
Oh, no.
It's kind of a weak scene to start with.
It was interesting, too, because, you know, I'm just watching these episodes when we review them, so I have, mm-hmm. I have no context for a lot of this stuff, and it felt really heavy in this episode. Like, all this drama was, like, I kind of rolled my eyes at it when I was first watching it, of course, but jumping right into the middle of it, you're like, oh, my goodness, these people just need to sit down and have a conversation.
There's, like, a series of, like, three or four scenes with them. It's like, oh, my gosh, yeah. Specifically in this episode, and it just grinds everything to a halt. But she goes on her way, and you know it's going to be Martha's birthday soon coming up, so Clark wants to get her something at the jewelry store. So he goes in there. He's looking at – I do like what he says because the jeweler's like, well, Martha tried these on last time she was here, and Clark's like, well, do you have anything like less than four digits that she might have tried on? I thought that was funny because Clark's on a budget, you know, because he just works on a farm. And As he's doing this, the jeweler pulls out some kryptonite earrings. Right? Did you like this?
His first weakness is not having any money, and then there, of course, it's going to be some kryptonite. And of course, the jeweler is like, straight from outer space or whatever.
Yeah. He says. So from a local jeweler, right? But that's so odd to me. I mean, I guess we'll never know because we haven't had a meteor shower destroy its town, right, in the world that had like jewels in it. But I feel like I mean, you get stuff like the kryptonite earrings here. You get the red kryptonite rings. Like, would people really want to be, like, I don't know. Like, would it be super, super cool and expensive, or would it be so much that it becomes nothing? Like, what would you wear around some meteor rock if it looked cool, Dan?
I mean, if they put it in this class rings and stuff, I guess I wouldn't really have a choice. It makes a certain amount of sense that everybody in this tiny podunk town is trying to get a leg up and just using that resource because it's there and it's not really available anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But, of course, it's also super convenient for the plot to constantly have kryptonite show up in every little thing that you could possibly think of.
So while this is going on, we have a duo of robbers. We'll call one the smasher and one the grabber, right? He even says, you do the smashing, I'll do the grabbing, right? Older guy, younger guy. The younger guy we're going to call Banshee for the episode because he's Banshee
okay. I'm
from the X-Men.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
One of the worst Freak of the Weeks ever, in my opinion. No personality, right? You'll get any of his perspective. He's not the best actor. I don't know. Like,
no,
the guy could.
He's not.
Like, no offense, but it's very one note.
He's not even the worst actor in this episode, though. I want to bring that up when we get to that part.
Okay.
But
okay.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot going on, and this relationship is really weird, and they never explain it. Like, it's clear they're not related or anything, or at least I don't think they are, but it's never, like, explained what's going on with these two people, or why, like, because this feels like this is their first time doing it, right? When he's in the car and he's like, you smash and I'll grab. And I don't know, it's just a really weird relationship. I just got weird vibes out of them.
Yeah, I mean, you would assume it would be like a father and son team or something, but it's not. So you're like, what is their relationship? I guess maybe they both work at the tow factory or the tow truck junkyard together.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
That's the best thing. You have to infer because they don't give you anything.
No.
So.
No.
So he goes in there. Banshee does his thing. Everybody's like, oh, my ears. You get this really like weird looking special effect where like he does. It's gross. Really, he moves his Adam's apple around and then his lips vibrate and it's really weird. Everybody's like, oh, holding their ears, right? Clark wants to stop this guy, But in the commotion, right, the kryptonite earrings go flying in the air, and then Clark uses a heat. He uses heat vision on the grabber, right? Because the Smasher Banshee is doing his thing. The grabber comes in with a gun.
Yep.
Clark uses the heat vision on the gun, but the kryptonite earrings are flying through the air. His heat vision reflects off them, gives him like this flash into his eyes, and then he goes blind. Interesting concept, right? Because you might think to yourself, oh, well, this explains why Superman just doesn't heat vision a piece of kryptonite, like stands really far away from it, destroys it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then no more kryptonite, right? But it makes him blind, so he can't. Major problem, though, this every other time in the future of Smallville where this happens, there's no problem. Like, I can't cite specific examples other than one I know for a fact. When Supergirl, spoilers, shows up on the show, she saves him from some kryptonite by destroying with heat vision. I'm like, did you guys not watch season 3, episode 10, Whisper? That she should have gotten blind from that. And anyway, what did you think about this conceit that heat vision on plus kryptonite equals blindness for Clark?
So I agree, it's an interesting kind of concept. It's feels clumsy in its execution only because it's like, okay, what are the chances that they just happen to be floating midair where he's shooting his heat vision at the right angle, you know? But if he was intentionally doing it, like you're saying, like he was trying to use his heat vision to do it on purpose and it reflected back, that kind of would make more sense. It would feel more natural. Mm-hmm. But here it's like, okay, well, I guess we're doing this now. I guess he's going to be blind. But I do like the idea that the reflection could cause him harm. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. And an interesting way to use kryptonite that we don't normally see.
That's true. But I don't know how they would do it. Like, if he's just, like, some episode starts out with him just hanging out on the farm. Like, you know what, guys? I have an idea. He tries to destroy it with his e-vision. This is a very dramatic moment. And, of course, you know, alarms go off. You know, the nice old jeweler pulls out a gun. It, like, stops the guy from robbing the place. Lana comes in. She's like, Clark, you okay? Because she was just down the street. He's like, Lana, I'm blind. He's like, somebody save me. Yeah. Like, that's the hook, right? He's blind. Yeah, what is this with this show and blindness, right? Lionel went blind last season. Clark's blind now. So, anyway. We cut back from the opening credits. The Kents are at home. I do like that Clark is in good spirits about this. I like that he's a moper in this show
for sure,
more often than not, right? And I like he has an optimistic attitude about it, huh?
I totally agree. I half almost thought it was out of character for him because, like you say, he complains all the time. But this felt more of a Superman attitude towards like an event like this taking place, where he's like, okay, I'm just going to make the best out of this situation. And, you know, he's making lighthearted jokes about it with people. Mm-hmm. And he's like really like, very quickly accepts this as his new life. So it's interesting.
And almost too quickly, because then we start getting into like, okay, things are moving really fast in this episode. Because the next scene we get from this is Pete and Clark at school kind of getting all his things because he's going to be, you know, take a break, assumably, from school for a while, and he's wearing sunglasses, right? And this is strike one in the okay Clark Kent glasses situation, because obviously he's wearing sunglasses, right? And that I don't know, like I feel like maybe they should have made a joke like, hey, who's that guy? I don't recognize him. I don't know, maybe that's too on the nose, but it's notorious for being on the nose about this kind of thing, right?
Sure.
But they go to his locker to get all his stuff. Lana comes by. She's this is another just bad scene between them, I thought, just very forced drama. Because but Clark's kind of being a jerk to her here.
Oh yeah, a huge jerk.
She's honestly just saying, hey, you know, when I went through my accident, blah blah blah, and he's like, oh, thanks, Lana. But I mean, he just blows her off basically, and she's like, okay, well, just trying to help. I guess I won't make that mistake again.
Yeah, it's very difficult to be sympathetic to Clark in that scene, like because like he hasn't been shown to be better up to this point. And it's like, clearly she was just like, hey, you just went blind, man. Like, how are you doing? And he comes off really aggressive in that scene.
I guess that's balancing out his optimism in the previous scene with his parents.
Yeah. Maybe he is like secretly bitter and just taking it out on Lana.
Putting on a brave front.
Yeah.
So Pete mentions that the guy who, the grabber, from the jewelry store. It's going to be on his mom's court docket, and she's going to hit him hard with the law. So this is, I think this is the first time we find out that Pete's mom is a judge, to my knowledge, you know, because Pete's family, we've heard about his brothers and his dad or this or that. We'll talk more about her when she shows up, but we'll have some things to say about her. But then superhearing kicks in, right? Clark's in the hallway. He hears, like, we get all the same tropes you've seen in Daredevil, like the movie before this and the TV show after this. You know, this overwhelming, I hear this and that, and kind of like in Man of Steel, right, where he's, like, overwhelmed by all these sounds. You get the close-ups of feet and, you know, lockers being turned, zippers being done, this kind of thing.
Yeah, it was. I will say it was much better done in Man of Steel than here.
Yes.
Here in Smallville. Yes. But
well, you know, they have a budget and all that, but even that aside, just the way it was translated here, and I gotta say, like, this is they experiment with the super hearing sound effect as far as the show goes. Like, here you see, like, you get eardrum, you see, like, the zoom in on the CSI, right?
Yep.
Kind of zoom into his body, you see the eardrum going. That's okay. Like, I'm like, okay, I get what you're going for with that. But then we also get these, like, really, really weird, like, zoom ins to, like, people's mouths. And
yeah.
What are your thoughts on that, Dan?
The close ups were very strange. Like, there was one of the zipper that was, like, out of focus, and I couldn't even tell it was moving. It just looked like a picture of a zipper. And
yeah,
it was just like, yeah, there are ways to do it. And even in Smallville, they do it better later on.
Mm-hmm.
But it just felt clumsy and weird to me.
You're right. Later on, I think my favorite of all these, because they introduce it a little later, is you see, like, sound waves going in his ear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, that's cool. Like, I get that. That's all I need to see. Yeah. Although, I will say this. They as they said, Clark being blind could have been its own thing, you know, and use his other senses to do that and kind of combine them as a wasted opportunity.
I kind of disagree. I like that that's just a reason why his super hearing kicks in, is because it's like they say in the episode, it's his body making up for his lost sense.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just, of course, at that point, it would just never go away. That's a really good excuse, I think, for him to get that super hearing power.
See, I always, and this is maybe the reason why I don't necessarily like this episode. I don't think this is achievement unlocked, right? Super hearing. I think this should have been something much like his strength or speed. Something he just always had, he has more acute senses, you know. And as he grew older, they got better and better. Like, there wasn't an episode where he discovered he could run really fast, right? Or discovered he was really strong. So, and there were other previous episodes to this where, like, it was like they hadn't decided what they're going to do with super hearing or not. They just knew it was a power that Superman had.
Well,
but, like, you see that he hears things that others don't. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, remember too that. In Heat, he's triggered by a very specific thing as well. So this certainly has precedent for that sort of thing. And I think I can see what you're saying, where, like, basically he just gets more and more powerful as time goes on. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that they would have to account for, and they do sometimes in the future, and they drop the ball more often than not, is having super hearing makes it difficult to keep secrets from Clark, you know?
Yeah.
So that there would be a lot of things that he would have not missed out on from before this.
True. Yeah, I can totally see both sides. Absolutely. But speaking of keeping secrets from Clark, the thing that, of course, the one thing that he zeroes in on,
yep,
is Chloe talking to Lionel Luthor on the phone. And again, we start out with this really weird mouth close up, and it's kind of unsettling. It's weird. It's awkward. I don't like it. And it's them having a conversation. Again, he's pressuring her for information on Clark, and she says that she's given everything he has, and she's not giving him any more, and he's, you know, threatening her, and she's, you know, lots of things are said here. Specifically, they start talking about Lex, because she had gone to Lex before, and then Lex obviously had, you know, Lionel had instituted his plan to get his mind wiped and him declared insane and all that, and that's done, right? But he's back at Luthor Corp, and Lionel makes a specific phrase that comes up many times in this episode, that his new position is just sharpening pencils.
Yeah.
And that will come back to haunt Clark and Chloe the rest of this episode, based off the way they chose to keep communicating that information. But he says something about, like, I want a full report on Clark Kent by the end of the week. But then this alarm goes off and it, like, throws Clark's super hearing all out of whack. And, but, you know, of all this, everything that goes in this scene, the thing that stuck out to me most is Chloe's walking through the halls of a high school on a cell phone. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought she'd be like in the Torch office or something. But no, she's just walking through the halls with a cell phone, which, you know, was not allowed. I don't know what the rules are these days, but certainly in this era, because I was in high school at the same time, you could not be seen with a cell phone. That thing's going to be confiscated.
Yeah. You know, well, first off, I got to say, and I'm not sure if you've addressed this on the show or not yet, but I was a little sad to see Allison Mack, what with, you know, the recent news and stuff.
It is a different vibe when you watch these scenes now, isn't it?
Yeah, which is too bad. And hopefully, I don't even know what to say. Hopefully everything turns out okay at this point. But so it was a little weird to do that. But man, I do love Lionel at peak Lionel. Like,
yes.
This is like awesome, manipulative, proto-Lex Lionel that I love to see. And it's so good to see him here just manipulating the heck out of a teenage girl for whatever he wants, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Throughout the whole episode, really. And their whole subplot is great throughout the whole season. Chloe and Lionel, and they continue to have their two characters continue to have these great interactions throughout the whole show. They just play off each other well as actors and characters.
Yeah.
But that's where we leave that. We will come back to that subplot of this episode in a bit. But, you know, Clark tells Pete, you need to get out of here. Something's come up. But as they leave, we see that Banshee is a student at Small High School. He's not just some guy that works at a tow truck company or a junkyard. He's apparently a student, which, again, as you said, makes the relationship with the other guy really just weird.
Yeah.
But anyway, he's there. That's all we see of him. Clark is talking to his parents about the superheroing thing. And they start to talk more about it. He mentions that he overheard Chloe talking to Lionel about him, and it didn't sound like it was the first time, right? But before they can get any deeper in that, Lex shows up, right? And they have a conversation. It does work because Lex has just gotten over being quote-unquote crazy out of his mental institution that whole episode. So he has something to relate to Clark about, people looking at you different, you know, because, you know, there's a middle-age, dark-age stigma about being insane, or he says something along those lines.
Yeah, it was a good line. I liked that.
Absolutely. And then Clark, bad move here, Clark. He kind of sells out Chloe kind of unintentionally, but he's probably mad at her for talking about him with Lionel. But he uses that same phrase about sharpening pencils. He's like, Lex, you think, because Lex says, oh, yeah, my father offered me my position in Luther Corps back. I'm going to take it. And Clark's like, do you think it's offers for real? Word on the street is, or I heard, or something like that. Like, it's bogus, and he just wants to have you sharpening pencils. And Lex is like, Well, who told you that? It's like, well, why even go there with this?
I was so frustrated at Clark. Like, why the heck did you even just say that? You know you're not supposed to know this information, man. Like, have 1% tact. Because this is crazy that you're just literally giving out every little piece of information that you had.
But that is in character for him.
That right? is in, yes. He's he's very bumbling in that way, for sure.
Oh, man. And this is great. I you know, because you need to be careful, right? That's like, take a shot whenever Jonathan says that. Hear Clark sing it to Lex. He says, you need to be careful. And I wanted to add, like, son at the end of it. but that's where they leave their scene. So Lex is, obviously, this has raised his suspicions and that these subplots. I'll say this. I mean, they did a good job to at least tie all these plots together. Although usually a weak episode can be saved by a good Luther subplot when that subplot has nothing to do with the A plot. So then we cut to the Kents having a conversation about Clark, and this is a good, like, real-world parenting moment between them, which we, you know, get to see in these early seasons. Martha drops a line, you both think you're Superman, right?
Yeah.
But talking about, you know, how Clark is, I mean, she's mad, and understandably so, because Clark's kind of still in denial about this whole situation. I think that's why he's coping so well.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jonathan is also kind of in denial, because he's like, oh, just, you know, working hard and doing all this stuff. And he's like, oh, I can do it, and she suggests, you know, hiring some extra help. And he's like, well, Martha, we can barely pay the bills. I'm like, why are we still talking about this? Why? What bills? Yeah. I thought Lex, like, bought the farm or something, you know? And then, again, this farm has been in their family for generations. And they're still, I don't understand. I mean, I've never worked on a farm. I just don't know why they're always in financial difficulty here.
Always. Always and forever. Yeah, I don't know why either.
But Clark, you know, he overhears this whole thing and kind of adds to his guilt, you know, feeling bad about the whole situation. And then we cut to Lex and Lada at the mansion, and she's coming to talk to him about her hospital bills. They've all been paid, you know. And Lex says that, you know, it's the least he could do because he caused her injury, and that all tracks, you know. But I feel like the main reason they're talking, taking a cliche Smallville dialogue yet again, take another shot, right? But she says, Lex, you weren't yourself. Like, mm-hmm. Man, that is Smallville 101. That's like in the writer's Bible. They have to put that in at least half the episodes every season. Someone is, quote unquote, not themselves. But the real conversation here is he asks her who Adam is, right? Like, who's Adam? And she's like, oh, he's a friend I met at the hospital and in physical therapy. I'm like, oh, okay. She had got him some, you know, gift baskets to get better and stuff. I think that's, you know, we mention him here and then we mention him later in the last scene. And that's Ian Somerhalder's new character who's in the bulk of the rest of season three. So we're just, even though he's not in this episode, they want to just keep him in viewers' minds so they're not confused about this guy we see every other episode or so. So that's really all there is to that scene. Also, you know, Lana mentions that Clark wasn't there and, you know, Lex kind of still being the Clark cheerleader, like wants them to, you know, hey, give him a chance, talk or whatever, you know, just very basic. The scene could have been like any episode.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. If there was an AI that wrote Smallville scripts, this would have, that you could expect that it would have wrote this scene for sure. Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. That's perfect. Oh, man. So the next scene, Chloe and Clark, right? She comes to check in on him, obviously because of his blindness. Did you notice how close she parked to the barn?
Yeah, I did see that.
She's like pulled up to the door, like could not go any further. She's like an inch away from the door. Is it a product placement thing with Volkswagen where he had to see the car? I don't know. But usually when somebody comes to visit, we don't have to see their car in the doorway. But
I will say there's one thing I do appreciate about this scene is that Clark learns this information and immediately confronts Chloe. There's no like six episode arc of knowing and, you know, trying to not pretend like you don't know, but and dragging out that sort of drama. I like that they just get it out there right away. And he's like immediately calls her out on it. So that was good.
Yeah. As fast paced as this episode is and so much is going on, that is a plus, at least in this instance, because you're right. Usually be like, okay, now I know that she knows, but does she know that I know that she knows?
Yeah.
You know, that kind of whole number. And yeah, she mentions her Daily Planet column. And then that's the perfect in, right, for him to say, you mean the one Lionel Luther got you? I'm like, well, and I really liked how assertive he is here, right? Because he's so, again, right, he's mopey a lot, and he's not assertive a lot. And this episode, he's optimistic, well, most of the time. And he's very just, like, take charge and not taking any BS in this scene between the two of them. And I really like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so much more direct than Smallville is 99% of the time. It really feels good that he's, like, just, like, I'm... He's upset at her for an actual reason that somebody would be upset at somebody. This isn't contrived drama. This is actual character drama. And, you know, he's just calling her right out on her hypocrisy. And because there's so many times in Smallville where you're so frustrated, where you're like, just tell the person and have a conversation. But and then it's exactly what they're doing here. So
the Smallville AI would not have written this scene.
No, right? It would not have. Yeah, exactly.
I love that. I'm gonna use that moving forward. If the Smallville AI could have written that scene,
yep.
That's great. And then of course she has to drop that. Well, I was trying to help you. Like that is such BS. That's like something Lex could say, right? It's like, oh, Clark, I know this looks bad, but I had your best interest at heart. I'm like, yeah, you're just trying to save your ass there. So, anyway, we get Pete. Pete is back to his cool convertible. We had seen that earlier in season two and it's season one as well. And I had to think, well, why are these cars changing? Oh, that's right. His car got blown up in the episode Suspect.
As they do. You know.
Yeah. As you do on Smallville, lots of car accidents, right? So I don't know. The Rosses, you know, maybe they have a lot of cars. I don't know. But anyway, yeah, he's in his cool convertible, but, it's doesn't last long, right? Because, you know, Clark and Pete are having a scene here Pete drops the term mega hearing. I guess they didn't. Did they not want to go that far and say super hearing?
I did. It felt like a Pete-ism, so it's okay. I was cool with it.
But yeah, Banshee shows up in the whatever tow truck company, the towing truck, whatever. And Clark recognizes the sound. Because he's like, oh, what is that? Did somebody follow you? Because he hears these chains. Like, and that's a, you know, a clue that will help him later on in the episode. But he Banshee comes out and does his sound thing, incapacitates Clark, Pete, and grabs Pete, drives off with him. And it shatters all the windows of Pete's convertible. So I guess next time we see him, he backed to one of those other one of those other sports cars. So that's a shame. Yeah. But again, very one note. Like, he's like, Pete Ross, come with me, blah! And then it takes him away. It's like, what a lame villain, right?
Yeah, he is super lame. And then and Clark, rightly so, is just like, hey, Pete, who is it? And, yeah. You know, Pete should just be like, oh, it's stupid Connor or whatever, you know, whoever he is. And but he doesn't, just because
of
reasons.
Could you read the number of the tow truck to me, right? I mean, there's a freaking, this guy is going to kidnap someone in a vehicle which has a business name and number on it.
Yep.
Like, that is poor thinking. Very identifiable car.
And I know that Pete, like, is trying to deal with Clark because Clark's kind of, like, incapacitated from hearing the chains super loud. But there's still a super long driveway between when the car is coming and where they are. So Pete could have at least been like, oh, you're hearing this giant tow truck that's coming towards us right now. You know,
right.
Just to at least tip him off a little bit. But we can't do that for reasons, so.
I did like in the next scene, because Sheriff Adams is talking to the Kents, and she refers to what Clark has to say as his ear witness testimony.
Yep.
So, she also mentions that Smallville has 45,000 people in it, which is probably what the sign says. I don't recall. But wow, that is not really a small town, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah. I mean, it's small-ish. I don't know. I guess it does feel like it should have less people than that.
The main part of this scene is Judge Ross comes over to the Kents. And who is Judge Ross being played by but no one other than Felicia M. Bell? So how do we as Star Trek fans, Dan, know Felicia M. Bell?
That's a great question, because I don't recognize her at all.
You serious?
I don't.
Are you serious? I'm taking away your Star Trek fan card. I know you're more of a TNG guy. All right, that's fine. But this is Jennifer Sisko from Deep Space Nine, man.
Oh my goodness. I did not recognize her. It's the hair. It's definitely the hair.
She has some radical hair that looks very different than her appearance as Jennifer Sisko on Deep Space Nine. But yeah, so this is Captain Sisko's wife on Deep Space Nine. She dies in the pilot.
Goodness.
Killed in the Battle of Wolf 359, which we didn't see on TNG. Got to see on DS9. She comes back in, like, you know, some flashbacks, then also the Mirror Universe episodes of Deep Space Nine. Anyway, when I saw her, I was like, oh my God, it's Jennifer Sisko.
Wow. I can't believe that I didn't even see it as Jennifer Sisko. Yeah, I'll be honest with you, though. I teased this a little bit earlier, and man, by far, some of the worst acting I think I've ever seen.
So she's the one?
Yes,
she's
the one. She was the one.
What makes you say that? What makes you say that?
I don't know. Like, that scene when she's, what we're talking about here, when she's in the kitchen, and she's talking about her kidnapped son, there was no emotion there. Like, she was just a blank slate. And I don't remember specifically thinking she was, the acting was bad in Deep Space Nine, so maybe it was just this bit here, but it was rough.
Well, maybe they didn't, maybe that's why we never saw Pete's mom again.
Yeah, maybe that
obviously sense. Pete leaves after this season, but still, like, you know, we hear so much about Pete's family, and this is the only time we see any of his other family members. Also, you know, Pete has, he has like four brothers, maybe. He has a big family. I know he's mentioned before, like, his mom should look older. You know,
yeah.
I think she looks pretty young to have five kids, but hey, good for her.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And, pretty young to be a judge too.
Yeah. Right. And then, okay. So conflict of interest here, right? Like, would they not just move this guy's to a different docket?
Yeah. This, like, trying to ransom a judge for like, this is not something you can do in real world. Like, they would know, no one would ever grant someone. This is the craziest scenario I think that they could possibly have come up with. Like,
And it's an open secret too. It's not like they called her, and like it's on the DL, right? The cops know about it, and they're openly discussing it.
Yeah, no. So you don't know. That's not how negotiations work. Like,
that's not how the force works.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So yeah. So many many problems with this scene and subplot. So Clark overhears all this, right? And basically, bottom line, if she does not drop all charges against the grabber who was in custody, then the smasher, Banshee, is going to kill Pete.
So now he is willing to kill someone for this man, for whatever reason, again, we're not sure what their relationship is, but it's deepening at least at this point.
With the mystery. Hey, Amanda, coworkers, you know, they spend a lot of late hours together. They're friends. You know, you bond over things, right? So,
yeah.
Who knows? I would not kill anyone for any. I would not. First of all, I wouldn't kill anyone. Period. Certainly not going to kill anyone for a coworker.
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway, Clark understands that. Okay, like stuff's getting real. You know. So he turns on, he's in the farm, and he turns on, like, all the farm equipment, and he's trying to focus on, like, a radio and stuff, and his parents come in, and they're like, Clark, what are you doing? He's like, I'm trying to focus, and they're like, well, I guess it's not working very well, or whatever. This is very Daredevil, right?
Oh, yeah. I like this scene, though. It was done pretty well, I thought, and it's a good way to kind of show him really, you know, the same thing with the heat vision, where they set up a scenario for him before he has to go out in the real world and save lives with it. He like where he's got to hone it, and I like right. That sort of stuff.
Yeah, Jonathan, like he says. Now, I don't think I'm gonna count this as an episode title, set an episode, because the episode's called Whisper, and you know he's whispering, right? And Clark's like, you know, trying to hear him, and he's like, oh, Dad, for a second I did hear. He's like, oh, I was barely whispering. So he says whispering, not whisper. And if I'm going to count the actual words, I'm not going to count, you know, other verbiage.
Sure,
so
sure.
Even though he says whispering, we're not going to count that it says whisper. So argue about it in the comments or whatever. But that's not an episode title, set an episode. This does go really quick, though. He does master this very quickly. But he masters, I mean, that is par for the course, right? He masters heat vision very quickly. He masters x-ray vision very quickly because, you know, good thing that he masters the exact thing he needs for this for this particular situation, right?
Yeah, for this exact scenario, yeah.
Mm-hmm. but you're right. It's a good scene, like a, you know, family bonding moment of them, you know, getting through an obstacle with his powers together. So, cut to Lex and Lionel. Lionel has been summoned to Luther Mansion. Lex confronts him about his job being a sham. Uses the exact words of sharpening pencils, which, you know, tells Lionel that, okay, well, it must have been Chloe. Way to go. Lex accuses Lionel. He's like, what, am I going to have to prove myself every day? I do like what Lionel has to say here. He is manipulating, but he is true. He's like, well, unfortunately, we have to prove ourselves every day. I'm like, that's actually very true, right?
Yeah, yeah. But it's also a way to keep Lex down, so.
Of course. But it's a classic, you know, Lex-Lionel scene, elevating the material and a great scene between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we have Jonathan and Clark go into town, and Jonathan goes into like a store or something. Clark is sitting in the truck, and I guess they're looking for Pete, I guess is the idea. But then Lana pops in, you know, as you do. You see your blind friend sitting in a car, you just, you know, jump in the car
in the
with
driver's
him.
Seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was weird.
The vibe of the scene is like him, you know, I did like how Clark apologizes. He's like, Lana, I apologize earlier, you know, I was in a bad place, and you know, I'm surprised with all the way I've acted that you didn't run away a long time ago. I'm like, well, that's a good point. I like how Clark is kind of owning him being a jerk earlier. But the key here, Dan, is he says this morning. And I was like, whoa, hold up. So this is like day two? Like if we say the opening scene in the jewelry store robbery was day one, right?
Okay.
This is day two, because I assume like the next day he went to school with the sunglasses. And now this everything we've seen, because remember that Lana scene took place in the hallway.
Yeah.
It was that same day. So everything we've seen from then to now is the same day. The grabber guy, he's in court. He's going to have a sentencing immediately, like the next day.
The next day, yeah. That's true. I didn't even think about that. But yeah.
Swift justice in a small town, right? Yeah. and they're going to kill Pete like tomorrow or something. So this whole episode is like a 3-day span.
Very quick,
which
turnaround,
is crazy.
Yeah.
Well, and then with, not to mention all the stuff that Clark goes through. So on this same day or the next day, he goes to the optometrist. We'll get to that in a second. But it's a very packed day, very packed episode, very packed day in Smallville. But anyway,
if you were a Smallville resident or a Smallville High student, you would not be wrong if you couldn't keep up with Clark's vision status throughout this episode, throughout these 3 days. Like, you just heard he was blind, all of a sudden he could see again. Of course, we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, that's not going to raise any red flags to anyone. But anyway, this scene, I will say this, for all the Clark and Lana scenes in this episode, this one was pretty good. I like this one. Yep. Clark was owning his mistakes. Lana was reaching out Clark kind of presumes a little too much, grabs her hand, you know, she pulls back and has got to go. So he gets shut down because it was kind of selfish because he was like, well, yeah, I mean, things are different now. I don't want to be alone anymore. It's like, well, sorry, bro. You shouldn't have toyed with your emotions so much these whole 3 years. So,
yeah, that was rough. The ending, that last part of the scene was Clark getting a little desperate.
Mm-hmm. But then we hear that sound again, like, and Clark's like, what is that sound? What is that sound? And we see that it's the tow truck that Banshee is driving. And he's like, Lana, get my dad. It's very important. And I thought he was going to tell Jonathan, hey, what's that truck? That's the one that took Pete, right? But no, he very, very amusingly, I thought, jumps on the back of the truck.
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, I guess he doesn't have to worry about getting hurt, but it's still pretty obvious.
True, but then I guess, you know, because the tow truck has, like, the whole thing at the back, like, the cross beam that it gets, you know, cars from, that he can't see that Clark is behind him the whole time.
Yeah.
Clark apparently just guesses a good time to jump off.
I just assume he stayed on until Banshee got out of the front seat and walked into the building or whatever.
Well, no, but the car was still moving. When Clark got off.
I don't remember that.
Still moving. I'm like, bro, you kind of took a risk there.
Oh my goodness, that's funny. Yeah, that makes no sense at all. That makes zero sense.
So he hears him go in and hears Pete yelling like, help, help, help. So Clark busts in, but Banshee, you know, I guess like pistol whips Pete and knocks him out. Hits him so hard like he's sitting there bleeding in the chair. Talk about brain damage on this show. Right? And again, very poor villain. He's like, what are you doing? You're blind, man. Ugh. He pulls out like a torch and waves a torch in front of his eyes. What'd you think of this, Dan?
What the heck was that about, man? Like,
Why would you do that?
Again, this was the most perplexing writing decision. I mean, I guess I see what their end goal was here because it, quote unquote, broke up the scar tissue or whatever it supposedly did. But why would you attack a blind person in their eyes? This makes no sense, unless I guess you have like a really like gross hatred of the disabled. I don't understand why this man did this.
Well, I guess he knows that Clark, well, he can see him. So what danger does he really pose?
Yeah.
It's weird. And see, that's the biggest problem. That is the loophole that they find that fixed his vision. Right, because we see that happen. Banshee runs out with Pete, but Clark, we see his vision start to kind of fade back in a little bit, and then we cut the commercial. We come back, and Jonathan says something about like the heat from the torch must have broken up the scar tissue. It's like what?
Yeah, like okay, so if that makes total sense to you people, why didn't you try doing that on your own earlier?
Yeah, yeah, and then of course he says he still can't use his heat vision or his eyes or his heat vision or his X-ray vision, which makes sense. But you know, Clark is, you know, he's kind of that like double vision. You know, it's a blurry. We get some point of view shots from him, and Clark's like, well, you know, they're gonna kill Pete. We can't just sit here and do nothing. And John's like, okay, but there's one stop we have to make, and it's to the optometrist. Now, first of all, they use the Smallville like hospital set.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not going to count it as a hospital visit because the optometrist is not the hospital, even though they use the same set. Although, if you think I should, I will. Dan, what do you think?
See, I would say yes because they didn't even try to redress it. Like, there's not even like a sign that says optometrist or something. It's just this hospital set. So
okay, well, there it is. Yes. See, this makes up for Perry where you did not give me the Kent truck accident for the tractor.
Yeah,
remember that?
Yep.
It had a license plate, man. But okay, that's cool. That's cool. It's good because I was on the fence. Now we're going the other way. I like it. Balances out. So we're gonna plus one for hospital visit.
Unless maybe right. The optometrist is in the Smallville hospital, which would be crazy,
but then would for sure be a hospital visit. You're right. The complete lack of effort on their part, they deserve a plus.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Couldn't they just hung a sign that said optometrist at the same location that the jewelry store was?
Exactly. I was thinking the exact same thing, yeah.
All right, but here it is, man. Clark Kent in glasses. This could have been and should have been an iconic moment or turning point for this show, right? But it's an afterthought in an already overpacked episode. That's right, Taken. And they just blow through it real quick. What are your thoughts on this here?
Yeah, it's weird. I would have thought that this episode is paced really strangely. Like, he's already over his blindness now, and we're not even to the climax. I would have thought he would have had to use his super hearing without the vision to overcome the final part of the episode, and then his vision comes back. Maybe it was just a timed thing or whatever. But it's weird that they do this, and then, like, yeah, you're right. Like, him getting glasses should be a moment, or there should at least be a little bit of excitement around it. But it's just like, no, you have these glasses now, and we'll never really show them again. So it would actually be funny if he was, like, walking down the hall, and somebody walked right past him, and then, you know, gave him a double take and turned around, like, oh my goodness, you look so different with those glasses on, or something like that, you know? Yeah, they did. That's a missed opportunity for sure.
Maybe it's because the episode was so packed. I just feel like they completely brushed through it, and that should be a major thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Or it's just a little homage here. We'll obviously get more glasses later on, but
we do, you know. But so these are the glasses. They're not the classic Clark Kent glasses. You know, they're like glasses anyone would have. Like I said, like when I got my glasses in high school, they were these glasses. so I guess it might have been too long. See, here's the deal, though. Had he continued to wear them from this point, they should have been, like, the thick, you know, big black glasses.
Yeah.
Although, why would a teenager in 2003 or 2004 wear those?
He was on the cutting edge of being hipster. So
yes. That's true. Yeah. We weren't quite there. That's the thing. Like, I think had Smallville just come out a few years later, glasses would have been, like, popular again, right? But I felt like at the time they didn't want to, like, you know, put something on Tom Welling's beautiful face, right? Like, they probably thought, like, well, we can't do that. But anyway, well, Clark has glasses now for the next, like, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, man.
But the glasses will be a conversation we'll continue throughout the show. But anyway, the next scene is Lionel and Chloe, and this scene is where she flat-out references that Metropolis is a three-hour drive because Lionel calls her to his office. He's like ignoring her, you know, and she's like, is this the part where I'm supposed to cough suggestively? I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But he's actually very intimidating here, you know, because he's telling her that that he's going to cancel her Daily Planet column, and she's like, well, you can't do that. And then she kind of threatens him, like, I bet the Daily Planet would be interested in a billionaire who's obsessed with a farm boy. He's like, are you threatening me? I'm like, oh, Lionel turned up the evil, huh?
Yeah, evil Lionel is the best. Like, John Glover is so good at it. It bothers me when they do all those other sorts of things where they try to make him good or whatever. Mm-hmm. I love when he's just 100% what Lex is going to turn out to be when he gets older. It's so good.
And you said it earlier, he is like the proto Lex here in the show, and that is excellent. Now, this is a bold move, right? She's like, you be careful. She's like, I'll be whatever I want. And then she walks out, and you see her in the foyer. She's like, oh my God, what did I just do? Yeah. You know, I like that moment there.
Yeah, I like that whole bit because it's kind of in character for Chloe to stand up for herself, but she also recognizes that she is out of her league. And,
right. You know, as he says, that's another Smallville, like, 101. You're out of your league. He tells her that. Smallville dialogue 101.
Yeah, as she, you know, this teenage girl walks out of this billionaire's office, she's like, yeah, oh my goodness, I got to get out of here.
So then our next scene is with your favorite character at the courthouse. Jennifer Sisko is here talking about how letting him go goes against everything that I've ever stood for, but they're going to kill my son. And again, having a conversation like this, like in a courthouse, like with police around, like this is not how it's done.
It's not how the justice system works. Very distracting. Yeah.
No, I've watched enough Law and Order to understand how the criminal justice system works. And the criminal justice system, there's...
yeah, right. There's one smasher and one grabber.
Yeah, exactly. Very good, very good. But yeah, huge conflict of interest here. But she's like, well, okay, I'm going to go pray. And then we see the grabber. He's like, talking to his lawyer or whatever. Lawyer walks off.
The lawyer, I don't know if you noticed, but the lawyer... You know, when she's talking to him and she walks away, she's got this smug, like, oh, I'm totally going to win this case look on her face. And it's like, lady, this judge's kid is on ransom for this. Like, somebody's going to die. And she's so happy and pleased with herself. Like, I don't think this counts as a win for you in your book, you know?
I mean, sometimes defense lawyers can be a little shady, but I think with the knowledge that a teenager is going to be killed, it should not... I'm sure any lawyer, even if you're like a terrible person, like you would draw the line, you know, at someone else being killed.
Yeah.
But no, that's a great point because, you know, that that lawyer walks off and then the grabber pulls out his cell phone and calls Banshee. And it's like, all right, I should be out here in 20 minutes if this judge knows what's good for. Go ahead and take care of the Ross kid or whatever. I'm like, okay, we're going to kill him anyway?
Yep.
Like, is that necessary? Like, why kill him anyway? Like, why not actually release him?
Because these are the stupidest criminals of all time. They're trying to hold their court case in ransom. Yeah, it's so dumb. Because, first of all, they know who you two people are. Like, they're as soon as... Mm-hmm. If you kill someone, they're going to come right back after you. What the heck are you doing, man? Like, it's so dumb.
Oh, man. But Clark, you know, Clark uses his super hearing to hear the phone call and we get more of these kind of weird effects as they're still trying to figure it out. Again, I don't like the mouth at all. I'm glad they moved away from that. But he tracks him to a junkyard. And the junkyard, this made me think of Superman 3 when he's in the junkyard.
Oh, yeah.
This make you think of that?
Yeah.
Especially because Pete is inside a car, inside like a crushing machine. And that is, there's like a crushing machine in Superman 3. Like the evil Superman like crushes, you know, Clark Kent in one and he busts out of it and stuff. So it's just, you know, Superman 3 vibes. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it is a cool set piece. Yeah. I guess not getting an optometrist's office was worth getting the junkyard, huh?
Yeah, I could see it. I could see it being worth that, yeah.
So Clark super speeds up and he has to use his super hearing to locate Pete because he's inside a trunk inside a car. So that saves the day. And Banshee tries to use his little power on Clark. He's like, well, it's funny because Clark doesn't know what he looks like, right? He's like, excuse me, do you work here?
Yep, that's right. That was a good little bit. Mm-hmm.
What are you doing here, blind man? Blah, again. Bad character, bad actor.
This man just has an irrational hatred of blind people, and it causes him to do the stupidest things. I don't understand why he acts the way he does.
Then he uses his little banshee power and to incapacitate Clark, but it's not, you know, Clark's kind of getting his footing and kind of overcomes it, super speeds out of the way, and then this tower of cars falls on this guy, crushes him. He's dead. Like this, I mean, that guy's dead.
Yeah, he is.
And that's a plus one for Smallville High School student death because, as was established in that one shot of him in high school, he is a student of Smallville High School. So.
It's so clumsy, too, the scene, because he's standing in front of Clark, and Clark is standing underneath this tower of squished cars that are going to fall. Now, Clark doesn't have to super speed out of the way. He could just stand there and be fine.
Right.
But he does, and he super speeds like 3 feet to the left of Banshee and doesn't like try to get him out of the way at all. Mm-hmm. It's like weird. Like he doesn't try to save him, even though he doesn't need to get out of danger or anything like that himself. It's just an easy excuse to kill Banshee because he's useless now, I guess, to the plot.
Right. Well, and what do you think the other guy thinks, the grabber, about all this, right, when he finds out what happened?
I imagine a scene very similar to the one in Return of the Jedi where the creature under Jabba's palace?
Oh, the Rancor trainer.
When the Rancor, yeah, the Rancor trainer finds out about the Rancor, yeah.
I imagine that's a great
just like that.
That always made me sad when I was a kid.
Oh, it is. It's terribly sad.
Because the Rancor, like, you know, he's a cool monster, and then Luke crushes it with the door, right? And then you hear it kind of whine like a puppy. You're like, oh. And then you see, like, how upset the other guy is, and I was like, oh. Like, that really affected me as a kid. Like, Return of the Jedi, for being kind of kiddie, it has that, and then it has, like, the saddest scene of any film ever, where the Ewok dies, right? And
his other friend, yeah.
Mm-hmm. His other friend goes to, like, wake him up, and he won't wake up because he's dead. I'm getting chills right now thinking about it. It's so upsetting. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
That's an intense scene, for sure.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Well, in the companion, Mark Verheiden had this to say about the climax here. The rescue of Pete could have been more challenging when he was blind, and he was forced to save Pete only using his hearing. That was more challenging, but once he got his sight back, it just became, quote, let's find Pete. But basically his point is, it would have been more of a challenge if Clark can get his sight back to the end of the episode, and I agree. But hey, we got the glasses for a little bit, I guess, you know, and maybe they want to just, again, just so much stuff happens, right? I mean, remember, this is the same day, right? Is it not, or is it, this is day three, I guess, because Clark's wearing different clothes and he has glasses now.
Yes.
And they said tomorrow that they were going to kill Pete.
Right,
day
because
three.
Of the, that was when the hearing was. Hmm. And this,
so as,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as you said, you're right, it's like, oh my God, did you hear about Clark? He's blind. Oh, he's back at school with sunglasses. Oh, he's got real glasses now. Oh, he's back to normal.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's not weird at all.
Yeah.
I did like, though, the next scene. And quick aside before that, did you notice what was on the Talon marquee? I've made it a point doing the podcast to keep an eye out for this.
I did not.
It said Silent Film Festival. And I thought, that's clever, you know, because...
Oh, yeah, that's cute. Okay, I like
Although it's the opposite. Like, if you're blind, a silent film is the last thing you want to watch.
Yeah, but you can kind of see what they're going for.
It's come to my... I didn't know this. It's come to my attention, though, that the marquees, they're not... I always thought they'd, like, go up there and physically change them, like you would in the real world. And sometimes maybe they did. But a lot of the times they were CGI. So it was easy for them to just switch out some letters and use stock footage and do like a cool in joke or something like that.
Oh,
like
that makes sense. Yeah, that
like
makes
in
sense.
Like in the episode Rush, like there's like, get your morning rush with coffee from the Talon. I was like, okay. So anyway, that saves a lot of manpower. All they got to do, plug in the stock footage, put in the CGI. So anyway, so that's the establishing shot. We cut inside. Pete is telling this group of girls, and I think a couple of guys are there, but just this group of students about how, you know, he that's how I saved myself from the trash compactor. I'm like, oh, wow, you're so awesome. I'm going to call you later, you know. So that was a good moment. Actually, I like that about Pete. That fits what we know about him, and I wish we would have seen more of that in the show.
Yeah, that was nice. It was a nice moment, especially when Clark – I liked that little Pete Clark moment when Clark was just sitting there, like, laughing. Like, oh, yeah, you're going to, you know, try to get a girlfriend out of this. And then it doesn't bother him at all or anything like that. It was a good little moment. I liked it.
You're talking to the master truthbender. So
yeah, that was cool. Yeah, that was good.
So that was a nice moment, immediately brought down by Chloe showing up with her. she shows up and she's upset, and like Pete was going to get some big interview, and she's like, sorry, Pete, I'm dealing with a lot. Daily Planet just canceled my column. My dad got just laid off from Luther Corp. Lex is the one who did it. So Clark realizes, oh no, using the exact phrase I heard in this conversation I should have mentioned has had terrible consequences.
Yeah.
So he goes to Lex, and this is a cool scene. This scene of Clark in the glasses, I had this. Do you remember Live Journal, Daniel?
Sure. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I had a Live Journal for, you know, when I was in high school and early college. And then with the rise of Facebook and Twitter, like, kind of obviously just faded out. But this was my Clark, like, the screenshot or the promo picture of Clark in the glasses here in this scene talking to Lex. That was my Live Journal icon for, like, a year or two. Because I'm like, yeah, Clark Kent glasses. This is the only opportunity I'm going to see Tom Welling in glasses. Because we didn't know back in 2004 that Smallville would run for 10 years. And they'd force him to finally wear the glasses in the last few episodes.
No, we did not know that.
But, again, this is Clark being, you know, assertive here and trying to fix his mistakes, you know, because he goes to Lex and he's like, wait, this is all wrong. You know, why did you fire Chloe's dad? And basically Lex, and this is very Luther, he's like, it's all about positioning, you know. They're basically using people as pawns. So it's these Luthers, and it's sad to see these normal people getting, like, moved around like pawns. But kind of Chloe, this is comeuppance for her making a deal with the devil, really.
Yeah, in a way, you kind of. I mean, you feel bad for her, certainly, but it's like, man, especially when she does it, you know, when Clark mentioned earlier in their conversation, she did it at an emotionally weak moment, like just in a vindictive way. She didn't even have to do it. She just did it to lash out. I mean, that feels appropriate for a high schooler, but it's still, yeah, consequences, you know.
And I feel bad for Gabe Sullivan because he's just a normal guy making ends meet, letting Chloe's new BFF Lana live with him in their house. Now he's lost his job. You know, he's lost his job, and the actor has lost his job because we only see him like once more the entire run of this show.
Yep. Yep.
So, anyway, Lex does make a great point here. He's like, frankly, Clark, I thought you'd be thanking me. At least this way I was able to keep you out of it. And that's a great point, right?
Yeah. I mean, Clark learned his lesson too, because, you know, just because you can hear everything doesn't mean you need to share everything.
Tact.
Yeah.
A skill that young Superman has yet to learn.
Certainly.
So we cut back to Clark at the barn, and he's doing like the glasses on, glasses off thing. A couple things I thought about here. Spider-Man.
Yep.
Right. Tobey Maguire, like, oh, I can see clear, I can't. You know, that's a cool moment. Also, like, he has like this like confused look on his face, or like a contemplative look on his face, I should say. And is it him thinking like, oh, I look different with these? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's me reading into it, being a Superman fan, but I thought maybe that's him like planting a little seed about his future disguise.
Maybe. I could see it, but it was very subtle.
It's a stretch, maybe.
Yeah.
But what do we got here, Dan? We got another Clark Lana scene, because I swear, like, 80% of season 3 episodes, maybe even season 2 episodes, maybe I should have done a counter on that. Maybe I should go back and do that. episodes that end with a Clark Lana Loft scene. And this one, yeah, what did you think of this scene?
Meh.
This is the Smallville AI script generator wrote
definitely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It's just, whatever. And there's a new guy and, okay. And yeah, it's just so, man, this, I never liked Lana. I never liked Clark and Lana. So I tire of this way quicker than most people, but this is, in this episode, this is like the third or fourth scene of this stuff. And it's just, no, I'm done. Like, have something more interesting as your last scene. But this was not great.
Yeah. Well, also, I will say this. Clark does kind of apologize. He's like, hey, Lon, I was way out of line earlier. You know, I was kind of in a dark moment. You know, when he, like, grabbed her hand and all that stuff. I did. That was a good moment. But, yeah, other than that, you know, it's like, she says, oh, I met someone. I'm like, really? It's like, the whole Adam thing, like, they never even really, like, have a relationship. I mean, they're, like, friends and, like, have a shared experience, I guess, with the physical therapy, but they're kind of hitting the accelerator on that. But, again, just that's why that character is here, to create drama between Clark and Lana. So, but, hey, better a character like that than Lex. Ugh. Hate that plot.
Yeah.
Ugh. But, yes, they do their basic Clark and Lana thing, and she leaves. And of course, he uses super hearing to hear her cry, right, as she leaves?
Yep, just because, well, he can do that now. So, you know, instead of just being creepy to stare at her through his telescope, he can now hear what she's doing at all times.
Good thing she's not his neighbor anymore.
Yeah.
Now, what did you think of this Kid Rock song at the end?
Oh, my goodness. I love this Smallville music, like 90% of the time, and I was so jarring to hear it. I'm like, I don't remember this song. This is awful. I'm glad I don't remember this song. This was not for me. But because I generally think they pick really good music, you know, especially for these emotional end beats. It didn't work for maybe because I was already irritated with the scene, but also because of the music.
Yeah, I'm glad you agree, because I felt the same way. Like, I again, Smallville, nine times out of 10, nail it with the music, right? This just felt really out of place. Yeah, it's Kid Rock, cold and empty, and it felt like way too, I don't know, country western. Like, it felt out of, like, they're not at the Wild Coyote here. Like, I don't know why we're hearing, like, if you're going to play that, make it fit the context. And, you know, they could have put, like, any, like, generic, whatever, 2000s song here. And this just didn't fit, and I agree. It's very jarring and surprising for Smallville to have like a. Rarely do I comment that the music was a miss, but this was certainly a miss. I'm glad you agree. We're on the same page there. But yeah, Kid Rock takes us out, and we hear Lana. We don't get the weird like zoom in or anything. Maybe they ran out of special effects money by this point. All we hear is we get a shot of like Clark turning his head, and we hear Lana crying, and then they play us out, and that's the end. Of Whisper.
And that's the way I pulled myself out of the compactor and got away.
Oh my God, that's the bravest thing I've ever heard.
Well, you know, if I didn't do something fast, I'd be spamming the can, so.
Well, I'm glad you're okay. Call me.
I will do that.
I have a feeling I'll be hearing this story for a long time.
Busted. But you know, what can I say? Chicks dig a hero.
Uh-huh.
Hope you don't mind I'm bending the truth a little bit.
Pete, look who you're talking to, the master truth bender. Besides, after everything you've done for me, it's the least I can do.
What's the matter?
My eyes are just adjusting. I think I need a new prescription.
Whisper got an 8.2 out of 10 on IMDb. And the Superman Ho page, Neil Bailey, gave it a 4 out of 5. So I ask you, Dan, on the letter grade scale, how would you rate Whisper?
I think I would give it, probably a C, I'd say. There's some interesting bits, but a lot of it's forgettable, and a lot of it is really stupid setup. But the super hearing bits are kind of cool, and the music is terrible. So yeah, you know what, I will amend that. I'll give it a C minus, slightly below what you would expect for a median level. So yeah, I'd say C minus.
You know, you're right. We were just talking about the music. That's the only song in this episode. Like, there's not even another song I could be like, okay, well, at least there's this one. But
yep.
you know, the more we talked about it, the less I liked it. Like, you know, I watched it, I was kind of on the fence, like, what am I going to rate this? Because there are some good moments, but overall, like even just the whole concept of, like, the judge ransom stuff, it's, like, completely dumb.
Yep.
In addition to all the other usually dumb Smallville stuff, right? Like, there's dumb Smallville stuff, like heat vision on kryptonite, making you blind, and then the accelerated timeline for his glasses and sight and all that. And then there's, like, just plot 101 dumb stuff. You know, so I'm gonna have to go with you, because if a C is average, this episode is definitely below average.
Yeah,
and I'm agree with you. I'm giving it a C minus. I know that sounds rough on this one, but yeah, not the best power episode by far.
Yeah.
So C minus for you, C minus for me. We have our tally board to attend to. We have a plus one for hospital visit due to Clark getting his glasses at the Smallville Hospital, apparently, or at least the same set. And then we have a plus one for a Smallville high school student death.
R.I.P. in peace, Banshee.
Yes, yeah. So that takes us to Banshee, right? I mean, it was Banshee. It was just an X-Men. Yeah. That's what Smallville does sometimes. They run out of characters. They're like, what's an X-Men with a power, right? But, I mean, there's so many X-Men. It's
what's
tough
a C-tier X-Men that we can use that nobody will get upset that we totally ripped them off? Yeah, there
well,
you
we
go.
We had Magneto on a few weeks ago.
Oh, that's true. That's true, yeah.
So a plus one for that. So, the totals of this episode are 35 hospital visits so far in the show and 8 Smallville High School student deaths so far.
That is a lot.
A lot, but still not as many as I initially thought when I made that category. You know, because the cliche is, oh, yeah, you got kryptonite freaks running around killing people and people are dying to not know Clark's secret. And yes, there is a lot of death, but the high school students themselves, still lower than I thought. So even though 8 people in 2.5 years... Man, if I went to that high school, I would be very afraid.
There would be some sort of federal investigation into what's going on into this tiny town, but yeah.
Oh, man. And then finally, the Bechdel test is a fail, as far as I could tell, in this episode.
Yeah. No, they don't even... There's... I guess... Because you only get Lana and Chloe, and they don't even appear with each other. Oh, and then you get...
Yeah, and then Martha, but she doesn't talk to Chloe or Lana.
Yeah.
So...
Yeah.
So, yeah, Bechdel test fail for this episode. Well, that was a lot of fun, Dan. Even though we didn't enjoy the episode, I enjoyed talking about it with you.
Yeah, it was fun. And we connected it back to Star Trek a few times as well.
Absolutely, because that's what we do, man. So on that note, man, where can people find you out there on the internet?
You know, they can find me all over the place. I have a few shows. I talk a bit about gaming. I talk a bit about Star Trek. But if you want to find the easiest place to get a hold of me is on Twitter, @OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word.
And you're also the host of Steady Alpha 3 on the Nerd Party.
Yes, on the Nerd Party Network, where we talk all things Star Trek, including both Deep Space Nine and Discovery, which we mentioned on the show. So go ahead and give us a listen.
All right, well, you need to start watching some more Deep Space Nine, right, Dan?
You know,
so
I
you'll recognize the next guest star.
I watch them all pretty equally, but I just, man, it's so, it blows my mind that I didn't recognize her, honestly. It really does.
Nah, it's all good. She did look very different. She did look very different than she did on Star Trek, that's for sure. So, as for me, you can find me personally on Twitter @MoronZach. That's MoreonCach. You can find the other podcast I do, Standard Orbit, on the Trek FM network, @TrekFM on Twitter. We talk about all things the original series and Captain Kirk. And as for the podcast, you can find us on Twitter @AlwaysMallville with 1S. You can find us on Facebook @AlwaysHoldOnToSmallville. And you can send us an email @AlwaysMallville@gmail.com, once again with 1S. All right, well, that's going to do it for us today. Talking about Whisper, but next week we'll be back talking about Delete. But until then, always hold on to Smallville. You know my ins and outs, all of my fears and doubts. It's the life I love, but it's you I can't live without. Yeah, it's the life I love, but it's you I can't live without. Life I love, life I love, but it's you I can't live without.